Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Mott, 62. His career went from 1948, October 1948, to 1962. February of 1962, his record is 8-12, one draw, and 32 knockouts to his credit. And fought mostly in Boston, like you. Always had the home crowd on his side, pretty much. Won the world welterweight title in 1955 against Johnny Saxton, who was 46-3-2 at the time. And he had to fight that with Boston Garden again. And we'll definitely have some good stories from him, I'm sure. I know he knew Rocky pretty well, so we'll have to pick his brain about that, of course. But a lot of big names. Carmen Basilio stands out as one real big name at the time. And then we also have, of course, tons of boxing to talk about. We had, I thought it was a pretty decent card there with the Floyd Mayweather card. And even though Marquez really didn't excite anybody, I don't think he certainly tried, given that. He pressed the action as much as I think he could under the circumstances, and it seemed like he really would have liked it if it had gone 15 rounds instead of 12.
I didn't get to see this part of the card, Rich, but you know, I follow it online, on the online blog and everything. I mean, I don't have any web streaming stuff, and I was kind of tentative on signing up for stuff like that, but I've followed like a live blog, even and two of the things that I really caught my attention on a couple of the fights. The first fight, which is Michael Gattini, they said that was a pretty good fight. You know, Gattini is a guy like service delivery. He's not a big knockout puncher. He's like a volume puncher. Kind of reminds me a little bit like a Jeff Dick was back in the day, or Carlos Bellino,
Marquez is historically a slow starter. In his first fight with Pacquiao,
left hand in the third round, and he got up, and he got a stub to get at the bell, and he actually walked the Jack Gale's corner afterwards. Mark Jones is very slow, but I thought the UV were picking up a little bit, but I think from what I read on the accounts, it was just maybe whether it was too big, too strong, too huge. It was the situation of a great bigger fighter beating a great smaller fighter. And there was nothing Mark Jones could have done to change any of that. With this credit to Marquez, was the fight, was it entertaining?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, I was actually watching both the UFC and the Mayweather fight at the same time.
It was basically because last week when we opened our show, we opened with the saying, I hate the other sport quotes from on Iron ripping the UFC and then Dana White ripping the boxing. And he was saying, oh, it's going to be all Floyd's going to do is wrong, it's going to be a dance of the stars all over again, and the UFC were guaranteeing the action. Well, I will put it to obviously discredit Dana White and me being the boxing fan that the first two fights on the card were competitive and exciting, and then the main event, Floyd did what he had to do to win, but he also beat Marquez up a little bit, so he made it somewhat entertaining. I didn't see it, so I really can't say that. I do know on the UFC card that a few fights ended in the first round, which is the main event, ended in 1-3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it was another example of the UFC bringing in outside talent that's better than their own, too. Because you had Vitor Belfort, who used to be in the UFC, from what I remember, and just crossed over into some other organizations, and now it's just come back and beat one of their headliners. Card of the undercard of the Floyd fight it was kind of a little bit boring. I mean, you could pretty much pick out who was going to win each fight pretty easily. There was no real controversy in any of the decisions. Michael Katsidis looked really good. I've heard that he's now the mandatory opponent for Juan Manuel Marquez.
Comes out with the pre-game plan. He tells me go to the body. He's got more
reached in you, he's taller than you, you know, you're not going to be able to get your jab out there. So what do I do? I do the exact opposite of what my trainer tells me. And I try to establish the jab against this kid right off the bat. And I tell you, he went to the body, and he put me down on one knee in the first round. And it took me a few seconds to collect myself, but I get right back up and weaded back in. I kept trying to land that jab, never quite could. Never really took to the body too much, and then I kind of sunk into waiting for him to slug himself out, which he never really did. So I landed maybe two or three jabs in the process of trying to throw 90 at his head. And I got him with a couple good body shots here and there, but man, the only thing that I could look back and say that I did well was I protected my face very well. I didn't have any real, you know, noticeable marks on my face afterwards. I didn't feel woozy. My ribs
still body shot?
Yes, my ribs still hurt. I believe I might have broken one or cracked one or cracked a breastplate. It does hurt to breathe sometimes.
And the reason I'm telling you that, Rich, is that there's a fighter from Lockheed, and actually, you probably never saw him fight because the year that you were boxing at VMI that semester, in like the second fight that year, he broke his hand on the head of your best friend, Jesse Bond. And then kind of put it out for you. There was only like 6 weeks before regionals, and he couldn't even train for 5 months. So, early in the year, like his first boxer, he had a big 6'4" kid, and he's sparring with me. And so he was using the jab on me and everything. So the first thing I did was I stepped to the side, and I had a left hook right hand, like right in the nose. And, you know, he ended up being a national silver medalist. Split decision and Tim Scott. You know, he fought some pretty big guys. But I dropped him, you know, left him right hand, boom, boom, put him down. Okay, so he gets up, and he's boxing again, and he's circling towards the left. So I just stepped over to the side and hit him with a right hook to the body, right to the rib cage, and I put him down on his hands and knees. And the next night, I'm all at my house, and, you know, two of my friends had come over, and this one girl was over, and she's like, "You're an asshole. What's your problem?" You know, she's a friend of mine. She goes, "Can you put Joe in the hospital?" I said, "I did what?" He went to the hospital and thought he broke his ribs. I said, "If I broke his ribs, he was not getting up from that punch there. He wasn't finishing the sparring session. I'm sorry." But, you know, it wasn't broken. You know, I just gave him a good body shot, bruised the ribs a little bit. A couple years later, you know, training some of these rookies. One of the exact guys, there's two of them. One of them said, "How are you able to block with the shoulder roll? Because it looks like your hands are down." Well, the other guy, I hit him with a body shot. He was, oh, and he's like groaning and moaning and pain. So the session was over. He kept on talking about how much is body hurt. I'm talking to the owner of the gym a couple days later. He goes, "Joe went to the hospital Wednesday night." I'm like, "For what?" They're like, "He thought he broke his wrist." I said, "If I would have broken his wrist, he never would have got up and finished the session. If you break a rib, you're going to be like McNabb was, well, 2 weeks ago on the NFL game, where, like, he could barely walk off the field, and he was on the ground for about 6 minutes, and he couldn't get his shoulder pads off."
Right.
Got a cracked rib.
Well, I don't know. I've had some broken ribs before from falling off a roof. They're serious broken, like, pop your lung broken. So, I know what that feels like, too. This wasn't quite as bad as that, but definitely still hurts. It was the training session was Friday, and the sparring session, and they still hurt pretty badly. Like, with every step I take running, with every punch I hit the bag with, I mean, they fucking hurt.
They're not feeling good, believe me. And I know, there are times when I feel hurt with something, like, I don't know how it feels. And I know from some of the guys that I hit with body shots, and I'm a heavy, very heavy-handed body puncher. But I know a little guy that didn't spar for a couple weeks after that. A little guy that didn't fight for a week after that. In fact, if you go back and watch my first fight with Jeff Spahn, which I have on YouTube, because I don't have access to the second one, and I got ripped off, I smashed the knee. But, you'll hear, and that was a fight. It was a little bit so there's no crowd noise. Drown that extra sound. Every time I hit him in the back, the whole thing is like, jump, jump, jump.
Yeah, the sad part is, you know, I have developed a very decent, you know, game to the body. And I started off mentioning the shoulder roll. Well, I don't necessarily observe that style at all, but I do keep my left shoulder pretty high when I crouch a lot, kind of like Rocky was doing his unconventional style back in the day, but a little different. You know, I have like more of a...
You're a shorter guy than I am, so you're going to have to fight, you know, shorter than you are.
Right. Anyway, he hit me his hardest shot the whole fight in the shoulder, directly on the shoulder. I mean, it skipped off my shoulder and probably would have knocked me out in the head. I really didn't take any punishment to the face directly, and it surprised me because he was flinging shots all over the place. He threw it one time, a 1-2-3, or a 1-2, and then he tried to split the uprights and get in between my guard. And I saw at one point in the first round, I'm coming towards him, and I feel liquid coming down my face, and I can my glove. I'm expecting to come back with blood, and it was sweat. it surprised me because he didn't hit me, you know, and I thought he had. It was just that fast. It was just not ready for that kind of conditioning level for me. Although I felt like I could have gone 4 rounds if I hadn't taken as many punches as I did. I felt the wind was there.
I was talking to my dad yesterday. I forget how we were doing. We were joking about Joe's best training at South Bay. And I started there in 1994. And my trainer and his best friend, and I think his best friend fought pro, but he never admitted that he fought under a different name, so I can't even backtrack it. But, you know, the guy's cousin had fought some pro fights, and, you know, this guy, Adrian's a real nice guy, real mellow, and he was like a trainer in the gym. And he would just come into work, I had no ambition to fight anymore. And he would just tell you, he was about 38 years old at the time. I scored. So he was about 42, 43. Then he got a real serious back injury, and he was basically walking with a walker. But all the time we were sparring with this guy, was in his late 30s, early 40s, but was in such tremendous condition, and he knew about how to fight so well that he would come in the gym and say, okay, look, hey, Adrian, we got a couple of young guys we need you to spar with tonight. And he would line up 4 guys and go 3 rounds with each of them. And Rich, I'm telling you, you almost fit out. Well, boy, I hope I'm one of the later guys, that way he's kind of tired. No, you want to be one of the first guys. He was like Joe Frazier. When he warmed up, oh, man, you were in for a battle. It's like, okay, each of my other guys tonight, I'll spar with Tony, Candyman, this young guy here and this young guy here. And we'd all be like throwing our gloves on as fast as we can to get in the ring first. Because once we knew that, once he was getting into 8, 9, 10, 12 rounds, he was on fire. He was tearing your ass up. And we're all like 19, 20 years old, probably 41.
Yeah, I actually got to the gym about 5 minutes after I got home from work in 8 hours, being in the house. So that didn't help. I only got like 3 minutes to warm up. And the worst part of this whole thing, last thing I'm going to say about it, sparring session. And then after the whole thing is over, my coach tells me, you know, hey, or my trainer there, Tony, he tells me, you know, do a round in the ring. Just shadow boxing. So I start shadow boxing. Who calls me over? But Goody, he's been watching the whole fight, you know. So I'm like, oh, here comes the old sage advice from Goody Petronelli that I've been waiting to get all this time. And he had a few words to me, right? So I go over, and what does Goody say? He kicks me out the fucking ring. He says, I got bad shoes on or something. Because I got these sneakers with Velcro, and they're black. So he thinks they're shoes and not sneakers. And he's like, let me see the bottoms of those, right? So I show him, and he's like, get out of there. You're going to scratch up my ring. And I get out of there, and then I'm over hitting the bag afterwards after the kid's gone and everything. And he comes over and asks about the shoes again, and so I'm concerned about my shoes. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Maybe he thinks it's like my footwork is all the big problem. And so he says, don't worry about that kid. You know, he's he's like that unless you go completely after him, you know. I did that to everybody. So I was like, all right, whatever. It just was funny to me. I'm expecting this big advice from the number one trainer there. He's like, get the fuck out of here. Get out of my ring. But I think actually they were impressed that I was able to weather the storm against this kid.
After and the moment after it happened, even it hurt a lot.
research on Sony?
I got a doctor picked up right now.
Alright. Is it the right one? The Boston Bomber?
Yeah, it's the Boston Bomber. Got a Mark Basilio and Don Jordan and a bunch of other names that I know. Remember, I'm right here.
Okay. You're going to have to ask all the early questions.
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Tony, this is Rabble Rousing Rich, and we got Tony the Tornado on the line here, the Combat Sports Show. How you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine. I'm in this conversation.
Now, we were just talking about the Floyd Mayweather fight. Did you get to watch that over the weekend?
No, I wasn't able to watch that. You know, I missed it. Unfortunately, I think Mayweather's... I would say he's exceptional. No. And that's, you know, he is a good fighter, good champion, and he's calling his shots. So the thing with Donald Floyd is he's so immensely talented, and I think he likes to play a worse persona than he really is. I think deep down he is more humble than he likes to portray. But I guess he just wants to just part of his conscience, you know, off the buy rates and how many people order these fights. So he's got to come out there and be the villain. And he's on top. He's on top. I mean, you know, he's showing himself and he's proving himself quite worthy of his reputation. And it's a good reputation as far as people not liking him. That's a different story. His personality is something else. But the guy is an exceptional fighter. A champion at that.
Now, the one bit of criticism that I did read about this fight here, Juan Manuel Marquez is a fantastic fighter. He fought two very close. And Pacquiao, he's fought a lot of other good fighters like Juan Diaz. But a friend of mine in the boxing game, Iceman John Scully out of Connecticut, he said in about the mid-80s, how impressive would it have been if Ray Leonard came out of retirement and beat Barry McGuinness instead of beating Marvin Hagler?
Yeah,
that's a good point, because how much more physically dominant Leonard would have been over McGuigan is similar to Mayweather being dominant over Marquez.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about McGuigan. I can't see that right now. But, you know, we're talking about today, and we're talking about Mayweather. And he fought, like you said, the guy that he fought and beat. He's no popcorn, you know?
A lot of people came to the radio before this fight, before Mayweather came out of retirement. It's the number two boxer in the world behind Manny Pacquiao. He fought basically on even terms for 24 rounds.
Yeah, you're right. So that proves that, you know, he's worthy of his reputation, too.
And Tony, looking back at your career, it looks like you got to fight most of your fights right here in Boston. And what was that like, and what would you say is the biggest difference between boxing now and boxing then?
Well, you know, same ring, same gloves, and you know, you punch the same way, and if you have endurance, you last, and if you don't have the endurance, you don't last. And there are some good fighters today that can be be compared to the fighters that I fought and the fighters of my day. And before me, you know, I've always heard, well, the fighters of yesterday were better. And the fact of the matter is, as years go by, they can say the same thing as everything came. And I just don't buy that. You know, I think they're probably, if we had more fighters then, I think now, that's for sure. And I think champions of yesterday were worthy
know, they're championship because they want more compatible fighters than they do today. Today they only have a numerous of champions, as you know. When we fought, we had 8 world champions. Undisputed champions. Now it's a lot of business today, you know. People, they want to make money, they want to call a fighter champion, and that's what they do. So you always fight for a champion.
Yeah, and I'm looking at your record right now, and I'm just looking at 9 straight fights where you only had one with a guy who had under 40 wins. And the last one in that stretch was Kid Gavilan, who had 104 wins. He beat him by unanimous decision. You don't see that nowadays. You rarely see a guy with over 50 wins.
He was an outstanding fighter and champion, you know. No question about it. His name is Ray Robinson. And of course, Louis Pep. You know, no one's giving Louis Pep any recognition lately. But Louis Pep is perhaps the greatest of them all. He could be. He used to be at the ready, he could be in the calling for it, you know. And we had some great fighters, no question about it. Joe Lewis, great. There's no one as perfected as Joe Lewis. As far as combinations are concerned, as far as punch for punch, there is no one as compatible as he. As far as I can see it.
Sport of boxing, and the one thing I said to him, I said,
a lot of times when you're boxing, I said, I teach you all different styles. I said, I'm going to teach you how to be aggressive. I'm going to teach you how to box from the outside and be the counterpuncher. I said, because if you ever get in the ring, I said, if you have style A and it's not working, you better be able to revert to B, C, D, E. I said, I can only name a handful of fighters that knew one style. And I said, Rocky Marciano was completely pressure. He came after you and he broke you down. I said, Joe Frazier was like that. And I said,
Joe Frazier is a very underrated fighter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and for me, Philadelphia, I've met Joe on a number of occasions.
I love the style. I love, because, you know, like I say, Rocky Marciano, he's a devastating puncher. Rocky Marciano, there's no one, that punches nearly half as much as he. But when you come to, you talk about Joe Frazier, I like his technique. I like his bobbing and weaving. I like his combinations. He was again. I say that he was an underrated player too. When he fought LA and beat LA, and then, I think, if I were to judge Frazier, he just made a bad move by going to Showbiz. But after that, they won the championship. They went to Showbiz for a year. I mean, what could happen in a situation like that. When you have, exposure of many good things or bad things. I think that if Frazier continue on, his hungriness and his eagerness, I think he would have been another really great fighter. I think another fighter that should be recognized that made a bad move, a bad mistake, when got married, and ended with a bad situation on that one. There was
trying to get rid of
the ring and tell us in the ring. alternative. I mean, you can be a great fighter and smoke and drink and all that. You're not going to last too long. You know,
exactly. If you look at anything about, if you take some of the great fighters in history, and take Rocky Marciano for one, and take a lot of these great fighters, what did they do between fights? They kept themselves in shape. That's why you got to get
here on 100 pounds.
Well, the first 5 years old at a high level.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me like guys like Floyd Mayweather and you know, some of these other guys coming back.
Part of a greatness. People don't talk about Willie Pep. I don't understand why they don't talk about Willie Pep. In his prime. He's probably lost one fight in his prime. And then chuck up 46 victories or something to that effect anyways. I think he had a record of most wins, most consecutive wins. And to my recollection, I haven't kept in touch with him, but about 60 victories or something like that. What is that?
Well, I'm not sure. We can check on that for you.
I'll put it this way. Willie Penn has more victories than anybody else. Well, he definitely has more victories than anyone else. In fact, Archie Moore, I remember hearing this and reading this. Archie Moore has more fights than Willie Penn, just slightly. But Willie Penn has more victories than anybody.
Funny, I saw one picture of Willie and I said, he kind of looks like Rocky to Dennis, and then by,
He looks like Lucky.
Yeah. Well, I saw one picture that looked like him. And so I'm reading this book about Rocky's life, and I come to find out at one point, Willie used to go to speaking engagements and pretend to be Rocky.
Oh,
well, he wasn't even a little older, I guess, but,
So,
And I also fought more main events in the Boston Crab than anybody else. Because of my those things I'm quite proud of, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Boston fans are pretty good people. And they really support their teams and their locals. I just went to a local show in Plymouth, Massachusetts. And I was really surprised at how the individual fighters would bring so many people to the event and their support. And I remember after one fight, it was just the kid's pro debut. And after it was over, half the crowd was gone. Because they had all come to see him. It was just the kid's first fight. So I can't imagine what it must have been like having all your fights in this area like that.
I have most of my fights in Boston. You're right. I fought rumors of fights in church in New York for a while. I lived over there for a year. And most of my fights were in Boston. And I was drawn here. And, money came in the picture. And, they asked me to fight. Madison Square Garden many times, but it was the price was right. And when I say I mean my managers, they took control of that, and I swear a lot with them because I have faith in them. But if they fought Madison Square Garden, which we did, we fought Ortega, Casper Ortega. The way that paid exceptional because in those days, of course, when I say we were paying, I'm not talking about the money they make today. I'm talking about $5,000. I'm talking about, $4,000 to $5,000 with television rights. It's three cigars. I bought three cigars at about seven, eight, ten times maybe. And that was like $2,500. So those were that's the difference between then and now. So now, a championship fight, God knows, you get $1 million.
Yeah. You would have got $10 million. You had to get $5.5 to the IRS.
$2 million. And as a staff, we lucky to have earned, a fund fee of $20,000 a year.
Right.
Like, that's a lot too.
Now it seems
My first, that was good. I made more money in Boston. It's so later on than anybody else. And then later on the money seemed to be improved on the money. Hagler improved the money when he fought for the championships in Boston. But that was the money structure, But prior to that, I have a record in the Boston for over 20, 30 years. More money made in the Boston Crab than anybody else. When I fought the Soto.
That's awesome.
And, I'll tell you, the gross case, then, to my recollection, was roughly about $150,000.
And they don't have really any boxing in Boston Garden anymore, so.
Well, that's unfortunate.
They have the Fleet Center now. It's not even the Boston Garden, of course, but, you don't hear of boxing events at Fenway Park or really anywhere big in Boston except these little nightclubs like the Roxy.
I have Boston Garden more times than anybody else. I fought with Boston Arena, and I fought the Mechanics Hall. Do you remember the Mechanics Hall?
I do.
Before your time, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Mechanics High, which was up, you know, it's just in south Back Bay area. Then I fought a Tony Pot Blake Steel, I thought. Then we pop it. So, you know, I've had a lot of territory in Boston.
A lot of boys at Major League Baseball parks. And I guess the reason they don't do that anymore is because there's a lot of licensing rights. I mean, I know I'm from like the Philadelphia area, and trying to get one at Yankee Park would be impossible. But I guess they also can't fill them up like they used to. Because, I mean, you always see Comiskey Park and Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park. I mean, it would be nice. I mean, I would love to go to an outdoor boxing event.
Yeah. Well, I agree. It was nice to participate in Fenway Park, Blake Field for that matter. But it's nothing really like fighting indoors where everything seems to be. You know, like here, it's touching reach. You know what I mean by that? The atmosphere. The atmosphere is just, you know, it's different. It's just different. I think, even the Mechanics Hall, that was a small car in the Boston Arena, but Mechanics Hall particularly, it was I don't recall the capacity. I would say roughly, we're going back 60 years now. I shouldn't have said that. This is just a chimpy. But anyways, the capacity of the Boston Mechanics Hall might be 4,000, you know? But it was so evenly squared. Everyone, you know, could reach out and touch it, and it seemed like that. But the atmosphere was there. You know, the atmosphere was there, and I kind of liked it when I watched the match tonight. Kind of like that even when I was fighting, you know, that fun. There were some fights over there, so. And the Boston Arena.
Yeah, at one point, it's not privileged enough being a Philadelphia guy that I get to go to is the Blue Horizon down in North Philadelphia. They used to showcase a lot on USA's Tuesday Night Fight. And it's a small, overlooking building. Only seat 1,300 people. But you have the advantage that you're so close to the action. And I think a lot of my friends, I was lucky enough that I've been involved in boxing in some capacity for about 15 years now. Whether it's boxing, meeting people, writing, doing interviews, something. And I've got friends on the difficult fight. And I think for a big place like Atlantic City, and they like it, but I'm like, but you feel like you're far away, so let me take you to a local show, and after the fight you're over, some of the fighters that I know, that I've trained with, come out of the ring, and I call them over, hey, man, meet my friend, meet this guy, and sign autographs, shake hands. People say boxing is dying, no way. I go to a lot of local cards, I see a lot of young kids there. A couple years ago, I was at a card, and the one guy that I trained with was getting ready for a title fight up at the Garden in 2 weeks. And he had gotten out of the ring, he had to fight the main event, and I called him over, and he met these two young kids that are 9 years old, said hi to him. That kid, their kid's father, emailed me to thank me for helping make those kids have a great experience at the boxing matches. And I said, you know what? I said, no, I thank you for bringing them.
Yeah, that's nice. It's nice. I'm lovely. But lovely your box. It's very nice. That's harmony and the finesse. That's good.
One thing I noticed, Tony, about the differences between, I think, back when you fought and nowadays is that, you know, you didn't see a lot of fighters that, like right now, you see a lot of fighters coming out of retirement, you know, making comebacks in their 30s, like I'm trying to do, but back then, you just saw guys fight until they couldn't fight anymore. And you
had these records. Well, that's people have when you fight until you can't fight anymore. That's a fault. Now, I know what was his name? One of the fighters, Nicholas, what's
I can't think of his name offhand, a little league fighter, champion. And he said, and he said in the last Ring magazine that he's going to fight until he can't fight anymore. That's the fault. That, I was sad to hear that. But, you know,
is that Bernard Hopkins? No, not Hopkins.
Hopkins seems to be a smart individual. Him and the lawyer, they seem to be partnership now. And they might be going to do very well with their partnership. I hope so, anyways. It's nice to see two capable individuals sticking together and I'm taking in the fight game, like, you know. I can't remember the guy that's middleweight fighter, and he said, in his latest Ring magazine, he said, I'm going to fight him so I can't fight anymore. I can't do that. Huh?
Boston guys, but doing that spectacular, and then they, you know, when
it was time to make the fight with Johnny Saxon. It was a question of the struggle with Saxon and DeMarco.
Converting into a
himself, Paul, to a red arrow, and he had an hooking, and that's how I was, you know, my hook. And, I guess it worked out in many ways for the best. But I was not pretty good in the softball. So I don't think I lost a fight in the softball. But, it's easy to say yes to a
injuries or something to that effect, which, I think
some of the old records, guys like Harry Grimm, you know, there's so much detail on BoxRec online where I get all the record information from. You see, like, you know, newspaper decisions and, you know, all this little detail that you don't see nowadays. I'd be interested in seeing that, too.
Yeah.
So you don't keep good track of
I just,
stuff.
You know, that's just the way it is, because it's the way it is, you know. Most materials were budget videos, really. And that's been specified, you know, specifically. As detail by cuts, by it's 200 over 40 decided too much. Someone should take their place, but back again to the days of before me, for that matter. You know, in my opinion, Willie Pep, I rarely think of Willie Pep because I think he's underrated champion. And Willie Robinson, of course, is always recognized as the greatest, or the greatest thing was Joe Louis. No, there was a bunch.
Right. Yeah. And you also looking back in your day to the heavyweight division compared to today, what would you say about the differences there?
Heavyweight division?
Right. Seems like nowadays, like you said, Tyson really was the height of the heavyweight division. Now nobody really cares about all these Russians.
Oh, I know. Right. You know, that's life, you know. We all have a turn. We all have a turn in the game, and now we have a lot of fathers that we don't know too much about. But that's sugar, so to speak.
Right. But it seems kind of funny to me that, you know, the European fighters tend to be the most strictly orthodox that they can possibly be. Like they always have both hands in front of their face. Box is strictly 1-2s a lot, you know, more than anything else, more than the hooks and the uppercuts, and, you know, they just fight toe-to-toe a lot.
Yeah. And they're hungry. They're hungry.
Right, yeah. A lot of them are from third world
countries. You know, and it appears to me that hungrier than we are in this country, and it shows on their professions, you know. Well, it's like that. Yeah, so that's my point this weekend. It's the owner of the two brothers, Chris Areola from California. Areola is trying to be the first heavyweight of Mexican-American descent to win a universal heavyweight title, but I think the problem he's going to run into here is that not that, like, you know, I mean, there's been criticism of him not being in shape sometimes and being a little flabby. But Chris's problem is, and we talked to him, Rich, he's a straightforward, trying to bowl you over type fighter. Unlike the guys like Marciano and Joe Frazier and Tyson that had great hip movement, Chris doesn't. He comes straight in. It's too easy to hit with straight punches. And I was reading another boxing writer, Glenn Wilson, who sent me his preview, and he's picking Vitor Klitschko to win in a one-sided fourth-round knockout. Yeah. Another guy that comes to my mind, and not to sidetrack what you're saying, but it's a funny listener.
Yeah.
We didn't speak of a funny listener. Did we mention him?
Oh.
Yeah. Funny listener. He is another example of a gutsy guy, and a guy with a lot of qualifications. As far as hitting is concerned, as far as technique is concerned, and he's another guy that went bad, so to speak, for whatever reason. I mean, I know he took his whole life. I think it's a good time for that. He's unbeatable.
I was talking to my dad the other day. My dad, a big fight fan from Diego over the years. And I said, all right, Dad, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Listen, Foreman in their primes.
You know?
And he couldn't give me an answer.
Say that again. Listen, who?
Listen, George Foreman in their primes. Like, Foreman, Bolton, like,
thank you. Sorry, guys. Yeah, well, you know what? It's a hell of a match.
I was
in life. You know, in life. You gotta
because it shows, my wife shows in the ring, whether you know it or not.
Yes.
Well, you might be good, but after a while, your life habits dominate your style, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because we were talking about Floyd Jr. getting back together with his father and that whole dynamic of his training and that whole atmosphere in the gym, you know.
Yeah.
Completely different, and you could tell that both of them were kind of becoming better people because of it, you know.
Well, I'm glad that he's trained everything else, you know.
Right.
With just some distinction, right? Don't we both try to catch the mountains? He trained the girl singers and
4 miles away from him, but he cuts his country club, and we visit each other, and what I like about Marciano, what I like what we did, what we, the experience we had, like he had his father with him, his 50 years, and I had my father with me in my training camp. Did you know that?
No, that's just okay.
Now, we visit each other. I'm lucky, the type of a guy, he didn't want to know anybody, he didn't want to see anybody, he is so slowly trying to invest it, but he makes exceptions. And with me, he made the exception. And we visited him and his girl singers, and my father came along with me, then his father, and then he comes to his country club, and we, you know, of course, we ate over there with him and his father, my father, in our camp. And it was, you know, it was a good thing. It was a good journey. The funny part of it is, getting away from us, but our father were about shoemakers. They were about 5 feet tall. And, you know, it was just great. It was great to see them together, you know. And the Rockies always, you know, was always crazy and respected me like to him. And he was much older than I. So we were advised, so to speak, to go to dancing, like, you know, where I had other individuals, like, when we first grew up, we had local fighters over here. And we met at dance halls, and you know, like Johnny Cam is an example, and Jimmy Sullivan, and these are all local folks, you probably don't even know them, but you never really meet the great victory, you know, they fought many things, but they never made a really thing. But we went, you know, like Frankie Stilato, and we had coffee together, and we were the same age, you know, and we were dancing, and we met girls, and we, you know, and we got invited, and we got married, we visited each other, you know, we were buddy. But Rocky, when he had 10 years on me, it was a different atmosphere, but we were still close. And you know what, when was a funny story, I told him about our fathers being shoemakers, and our fathers being together, and our fathers eating together with us, you know. That was great enough, but another incident that was really remarkable. One time, there's a beauty shop in the outfit of Boston, and I can't think of the beauty shop's name right now. I'll probably get it in a minute. But anyway, my mother, who hardly has her hair done, she's from the old school Italian, you know? And to go to a beauty shop, they have their hair done, that's remarkable. You know, that was the case back in the world, you know? But you know, actually, I've become pretty big, pretty popular, and she decided to go to the beauty shop, the least beauty shop in on the Adams Street.
Thank you.
come up at the mystery shops and Mike's Pastry and Martin Pastry and whatever else, you know, the pizza and pastries all over the pastry shops that will pay for you the meaning of the Michaels. Hey, you know, it's not this, true.
Yeah. That was a funny story.
It was kind of chill, so.
Yeah, so your parents and, you guys.
Oh, well, my father is still a little trading. This has been a many months to him, but before that, or after that, it was a separate,
completely random, right?
What?
A completely random coincidence, right?
Well, maybe you're right. So I think I, when I speak of my Seattle,
obviously, I wasn't alive back then, but when even meeting these guys and hearing them tell the stories when I was like 6 and 7 years old, you could tell how proud they were to be an Italian American at that time. Because Iraqi was like fighting for like the entire ethnic group, the Italian American, and they were so proud. My great uncle, who was at the title winning fight with Jersey Joe in Philadelphia, just gave me the program, the original, and the ticket. And my grandfather used to keep all of the newspaper articles from the rematch with Walcott when he knocked it out, one right off, and then the first fight with Hunter Charles, which beat him by decision. And I keep them framed in my gym, and whenever people come down there to work out with me, I always take a look at them. I say, you know, this is really a lot of history here. And in fact, these two guys are so proud, and thank you, me, to my father, and like both of these gentlemen died when I was about 6 or 7 years old. And so my memories of them are very easy. When I was a I'm 33, and these gentlemen are 20. See, I'm kind of a years ago when the Rocky would have been, what, 85 or 86 now?
Maybe. I'm 77, so he's got 10 years on me.
Okay.
He's going to be age for
something. He would have been, he was born in 1923. On September 1st, 1923. And 86.
I was born in 32, so something a little bit years, you know? So nine years, man. 9 years.
Yeah, 5 years.
I said 10 years. 9 years is close enough.
Yeah, some of the things I just remember, like these guys sitting me down when I was a kid and just telling me some of the great stories, like, you know, and they would tell me the one thing they'd always say, if you tried to block them, he would just punch right through and break your arms, like just as a star. And it was like, as a little kid, you're so impressed. And I tell you, the one joke I always tell the air was, people ask me today, knowing that I'm a big Marciano fan, could he beat Ali? Yes. Could he beat Frazier? Yes.
You know what I mean, Ali? You play all the truck pistols on his arms.
Exactly.
You know the ruffles over your hands? Don't get me wrong, Doug. I leave the great fighter. But you know the ruffles over his arms? The ruffles over his arms.
Huh? You want Foreman because Foreman tried to hit too much to the head.
But well, if you were able to
hit his arms and his body, yeah, you could have beat him down.
Ali had a ruffles style where he covers entire body with his arms. And he could have people hit him. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I remember that.
All right. You know what Rocky Marciano would have done to his arms? He would have broke all those bone muscles in his arms.
You know, that's what I say.
And at least, don't get me wrong, at least I'm a fighter. I'm not knocking him. I'm not, and I have a guy, too. I had the privilege of being with Ali three or four times maybe, and he was everything that, this guy had a great and a terrific fighter. But we're talking about Marciano. But let me tell you a little more story. Let me tell you a little more story about Marciano, okay?
Sure.
Huh?
All right.
Okay. One time, this is before I was champion, I'm not even sure. But anyway, in the 50s, early 50s, he's working out in a Blue Garden gym. And there was in Boston. This is the gym that we had, that we trained, that all the local fighters trained. And Marciano was looking to work out over there. And there was this guy, and he was a fighter. And he was from South Boston. And he was a good, hard puncher. And his name was Tommy Sullivan. And Tommy Sullivan fought the best of the local individuals. But he was like, beyond his day. But he wanted to box Marciano so badly. And Marciano accommodated him. He's here. So they boxed. And Marciano took it easy on him. And he hit him punches, and he hit him rib punches, and he hit the body punches. You know, he wouldn't knock him out. He didn't want to do that. But, well, he nightly had him. He was kind of nice.
Raw, the fight to box Montero again. So we know he took it upon himself to buy a Kansas Smith, Kansas Smith protection.
Okay.
You follow me? Sure, yeah. The favorite, the baseball players, Kansas Smith. Yeah. It's a freedom. But he had that on him. Because Montero hit him so bad, he broke his, he didn't break his ribs, but he hurt him so bad with body punches that he had a cancer spirit. So that's funny. I never heard of that before. But here's Montero now Montero's being limited because he's got a cancer spirit. And he's punching him harder, much harder than he thought he fought him. He punched him the first time. Just to he can take it, like, you know. I thought that was a funny story.
His title fight, the Archie Moore fight, the Rolling Stars fight, and all these great ones. You can believe that because the man just was so relentless when he hit that body. Hitting the man and breaking his arms is a pretty impressive feat.
Well, Tony, we're actually getting right down to the gritty end of the show here. Any final thoughts?
FNU.mypodcast.com